And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Talk into that.
Hello, testing.
That's perfect.
Okay, perfect.
How am I doing? Am I perfect?
Yep.
Okay, perfect, man.
Great.
Can't believe you brought me cookies. That's
I
super
know.
Sweet.
You're welcome.
All right, so we should tell people who you are first. Go ahead.
So my name is Erin Moeller. I currently live in Albany, New York, but I grew up in Wappingers Falls, New York.
And your parents are?
Doug and Victoria LaPerch.
My landlord.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This is their office building.
Yeah, they are so sweet, man.
They're such nice people.
Yeah, they're really amazing.
They like to do a lot.
Yeah, they do a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
All right, so you grew up here.
Yep.
From the gate?
Yep, from the gate. Grew up near the mall, the Galleria Mall, and I went to college at University of Albany, so I moved up there for 3.5 years, moved back home after college, worked in the city for a year.
What'd you do in the city?
Worked for a nonprofit in healthcare.
Did you commuted. Hate the city?
Yes, hated the city. The only thing I liked about the city is I met Alex, my husband, and I actually met him because...
Who's with us but is mute.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
And I met him actually because he is my stepbrother's best friend.
I'm glad you finished that off.
Yes. Yep.
I married my stepbrother. Yep. And the show would take a turn if we had done that.
Yep.
Okay.
So met him because of Nick, and we decided to move up to Albany after a year of working in the city. And we've been living up there since then, which is 2018.
Wow. And what got you up in Albany?
So I work in HR, and there was just good options for jobs there. And I liked living up there when I was in college, and the price of a train ticket was $500 a month, or my half of rent was $500 a month. So instead of living in the city, we could have double the size of the apartment in Albany. And there's great jobs. It's really good for young professionals.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of young people up there. There's a lot of colleges. And so there's certainly no shortage of work up there. And you actually can make the same amount of money as making in the city.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Should I take the show up there?
Honestly, it's a great place to live. And
I shouldn't take the show up there because I just got this.
It's not far at all.
No, I'm just kidding.
Hour and a half is how long it took us to get here. We come for day trips.
Yeah, I live in Westchester. I'm trying to move here. I grew up in Rhinebeck.
Oh, nice.
But then I went to college, and then I made a mistake of working in a city. And I worked in the city for like almost 25 years, off and on. And it was an hour commute on the train one way. So that's five. I did the math. That's 5 days a week you're commuting. 1 hour each way is 2 hours a day commuting, right? 2 hours a day commuting times a week is 10 hours. Times 4 weeks in a month is 40 hours. I was spending a work week on the train.
That's crazy.
Right?
It's and I insane.
Was like, yeah. It was like zero fun.
Yeah.
And you would not move back down here?
Nope. Would not move back down there. We love to visit.
No, here. Down here.
Oh, here? No. Probably
really?
Not. No, I think we like Albany enough. We like living in a city. So we live in downtown Albany. So it's the city feel. Alex and I both work for the state. So we take the bus to work instead of having to pay for parking because we're in a downtown city. So it's a city feel, but everything's in a 20-minute driving distance. And we both have cars and don't have to park in the street. So it's amazing. So you have all the perks of living in a suburban area but still living in the city.
It's beautiful. Think it's possible? Because I grew up in a suburban area too. Mm-hmm. It's Rhinebeck, so it's maybe a little bit more rural than here, but not much.
Yeah.
And, I spent my whole adult life either. I lived in Manhattan for a while, or Westchester most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Never, felt like I was in my skin. And then, about 4 years ago, I started this job and started coming up here to do it. And I'm like, oh my God, this feels... So much better. Like it's really hard to move from where you were born into a completely other
100%. I think it takes time to get acclimated to areas. And also, like, finding your people.
Yeah.
I think helps, too. If you don't have a community of people to reach out to and things to do in that area, then you're never going to feel like you're really at home.
Finding your people is so important. Like, and I am so bad with people that I'm so lucky I play guitar. Because if you play guitar, you're, like, built-in people, right? Yeah. Otherwise, I'm, like, so introverted. Like, or like, I work out. I guess I could have people that way.
Right.
But... like, for people that don't work out or play guitar, I don't understand how you make friends.
Yep, 100%. It's hard as an adult to make friends. Having, like, a community. Good friends. Quality friends.
Yeah, that's really hard. I think in my life, up until I started the show, maybe 3 quality friends.
Yeah.
Like, 4 maybe, right?
Honestly, you need just a core group. You really don't need... a ton of fringe friends,
yeah.
You call them. There's always some good ones that, like, you see at parties, you see occasionally, but friendship's a two-way street, too. So if the other person's not reciprocating, then it's hard to stay friends.
Then what are we doing here?
Right. Also, a mutual understanding that you're adults and you're busy. So seeing each other once a month, even as friends, is, like, awesome.
It's big.
Yeah. That's so really good. Especially, like, as you grow up and, you know, people have children and, you know, they get busy. But just knowing you have that mutual understanding that, like, you're still friends and you talk on the regular, you don't necessarily need to see each other to have that bond.
Now, you don't have children.
We do not.
Are you going to?
Nope. My whole life, I knew.
Really?
Yep. My whole life. I never...
good for you.
Never wanted to be a parent. I met Alex and I told him that. And I said, you know, if you want to be a father, I'm not the girl for you. And here we are married.
Good for you.
Since 2018.
Yeah. I waited... till I was 44 I have one daughter. I waited till I was 44 to have her. And the reason I give is because I was an asshole until I was 43. but like, no, I love my daughter to death.
Mm-hmm.
I love my daughter too much. But if it had gone the other way, I think it'd probably be as happy.
Like, I just know that, like, I can have a very full life without needing children myself.
Completely have a full life.
An amazing nephew's almost one.
How do your parents feel about this, though?
They're fine with it. I've known my whole life. Like I said, it's not like I got older, 21, and I was like, I don't want kids. I knew as a child I did not want to parent another child.
Right.
And I just, like, I can do all the things that parents get to do and have the same amount of love. You know, not as much because they're not my biological child, but I can have the same amount or a lot of love for all these children in my life and do all those fun things without them being my child. And I don't think that, like, people say, like, who's going to take care of you when you're older? Our pensions.
Who's going to take
our money?
Yeah.
You know what? And honestly, that's fine. Like,
it's by the time you guys are older, though, there will be basic universal income anyway.
Fingers crossed.
You'll have a chip.
Yeah. Exactly.
Your biggest problem will be cookies.
Exactly. Like, we get to do all the things we want to do with kids. And also be that aunt and uncle or those friends who don't have kids. We always say that, like, as people in our life start to have children, we're going to gift them 1 week of childcare. They can use that week to go on vacation. We'll come to their home. We'll take care of their kids, and we will babysit.
Oh, wow.
And it works out great, you know?
So growing up here was easy, hard?
Yeah, it was easy. We walked to school, actually, my sisters and I. I'm the oldest of 3, and we're all a year apart. So we're very close in age. Yep.
In age,
actually. And, I mean, as sisters as well, we're very close.
Right.
We all live in different areas. One lives in this area. I live in Albany. My other sister in Stamford.
Right.
So growing up was easy. I mean, like... it felt easy as a child. Like, I didn't feel like we had any struggles. Like, everything, like, we were athletes. Everything was great growing up. We had a great childhood. No trauma. It was great. Got to high school. Things were great. My parents got a divorce when I was about 16, 17.
Was that hard?
And that was challenging. I was at that age where, like, it was pretty impactful to me. And I was the oldest. I was just starting to drive.
Right.
And so I went and lived with my father, just my father. And my sister stayed with my mom. And so that was certainly a challenge. I didn't speak to my mom for a few years. But, you know, through therapy, through growing as an individual, we now have a great relationship.
How was therapy? What kind of therapy did you do?
So I've been in therapy since, I don't know, probably since I was 16. So over 10 years at this point.
Okay. Still?
Still. Yep. I still go to therapy bi-weekly now. And so even then, just talk therapy and just working with someone to help me, like, better understand who I am.
Right.
And especially I felt like it was needed in those formative years is college. It's hard when, like, you know, you can isolate, or, you know, you're just in a friend group where you have all the same thoughts. A therapist is a great person to bounce things off of. And even now, like, yeah. Because, you know, your spouse or your partner can't take in all your day-to-day things and isn't always the best sounding board for you. So a therapist is a great devil's advocate.
I tell this story. I've had, like, a mixed bag with therapy.
Uh-huh.
I've been in and out of it until I stopped doing it. But the thing that finally cut it off for me, it's a funny story. So me and my wife, I'm married like 26 years mm-hmm. this summer. But it wasn't always roses and sunshine. Yeah. So we wind up in a marriage counselor's office, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the first session you like debrief, like,
yep.
You know, here's what happened. Now I should backstory this with, I was fucking crazy. So, like, you know, I was more the problem.
Okay.
But that said, nobody's 100% the problem.
Right.
So she said, okay, what I want you to do, we did like one session, and she said, what I want you to do is I want you to go back. I want you to write down everything that you feel you're accountable for with the challenges of the relationship.
Great exercise.
I go home. I got that legal pad out, page one. Page two, page three. I'm going to town, right? Go in the next session. She goes, John, why don't you go first? And I'm like, okay. So it takes me a half an hour to go through. And she's like, wow, you know, you were very exhaustive, and that was great. And she goes, Trish, what do you have? She goes, I got nothing. I it's all him. And the therapist didn't call her out on that.
Mm.
And I was like, oh wow, that's a. I mean, like,
yep.
Maybe she's saving it for, like, another inning, but yeah. Wow, that was, like, really uncool, yep. Right? So, therapist goes, okay, when you come back the next time, this is what I want you to do. I want you to make each other a gift and explain the meaning behind the gift. So we leave, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I'm a songwriter. You just threw me straight
awesome.
Down the middle. Right. This is going over the fence because, like, dude, I can write.
Perfect gift.
Right. Nobody's going to argue with me. That, right. So Trish made me this. I can't remember what it was now, but it was like a stone with a feather on it. But it meant something, and she explained it.
Very
and
nice.
It was like, yeah, it was very beautiful. It was very nice. And I'm like, oh, wait, you do actually still like me. So then the therapist goes, okay, John, do your, you know, what's yours? And I'm like, I wrote a song. So I play the song. And, like, I do that for a living. So right. It's
easy,
a little unfair. So I play it. But the therapist didn't know it. And so she's like, oh, wow. You know, without sounding like an asshole, she's like, wow, you're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Trish has been listening to my music at that point for, like, 15 years. And it's just, like, up to here with it anyway.
Yep.
And so Trish is unimpressed. And so the therapist is like, oh, that's great. And, you know, Trish is like, okay, yeah, thank you for the song. It's not the first one you've written me. I get what you did. You
know, right.
Yeah. Right. But the therapist kept saying, you know, you should really pursue that. And I'm like, I like to. Thank you. So we leave, and Trish goes, we can't go back here. And I'm like, why? And Trish goes, because she likes you. And I'm like, at this point, I realize, okay, therapy just might not be my path. But, For some people, man, it's
yeah.
So what triggered you to go to therapy? What were you
so
when you were starting? Like, what was
yeah?
The,
so
did
I
you have like a red flag?
The first time I went to therapy, it was because I had to. It was because when my parents were going through divorce and I refused to live with my mom at that time. I was 16, so you can choose where you want to live.
Mm.
But you know what? My parents were like, you definitely, you know, just need to talk to someone. And so that was like the first time I went to therapy.
What was behind your decision to pick?
I think it was just I'd always been really close to my dad, and just the way the divorce went down, I had felt, you know, maybe wrongly at the time, or maybe right. Where I still, you know, I know what happened in my parents' divorce and why they were divorcing, but it's all about your perception, especially as a teenager. Like, I had a lot of hormones and emotions, and I felt like, you know, I didn't want my dad to be all alone, so I went and lived with my dad. And so, you know, that was certainly a challenge.
That's so hard. Well, yeah. It's hard on a couple fronts, I would imagine.
Yep.
It's hard, number one, because you got to pick between parents. And even if 100%. You don't like necessarily
right.
what one parent's doing, at the end of the day, that's your mom.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you're already being asked to rip your heart in half. And then you got to disagree with your sisters.
Right.
Which rips your heart in quarters. So now you got like one quarter of a heart.
Right.
And you got to go try. And you're thinking, too, I would imagine, you were also thinking, like, you're going to be a caregiver to your dad.
Right. And so I just wanted to make sure that, like, my dad wasn't alone. And so we decided, you know, therapy was a good idea just so I could, like, have someone to talk to, have a sounding board. And I didn't like the therapist I'd went to, so I don't think I went back. But I did start going again in college. So in college, they offered free therapy services at UAlbany at the health center. And so I went every single week to therapy. But during that time, I had developed an eating disorder.
What was the eating disorder?
So eating disorders are a spectrum. So I had started out, I think it was probably around like 2015. And I was overweight, like plus size, like probably actually similar to the size I am now. And I started, like, it's a spectrum in terms of like what behaviors you use. So I would say I started with like bulimia. So it's making yourself vomit. So after meals, making yourself vomit. And no one knew except my therapist. And eating disorders thrive in isolation. Mm-hmm. And so it just progressively got worse over the course of like 6 to 8 months, to the point where like I was losing a lot of weight, but also you thrive on people telling you you look great. No one knows that you're either restricting your food intake, making yourself throw up. They don't know the harm that you're putting yourself through to look like that. But I was still going to therapy and continuing to do that up until, you know, and my therapist knew. But at that point, obviously, they don't break confidentiality. No one's going to call my parents and tell them. Right. But my friends were thankfully observant enough. And one of my roommates, who I'm still best friends with to this day, called my parents and said, Aaron is sick. Like, there is something wrong. At that point, every single meal I was eating, I was vomiting. Like, you could tell the color drains from your face. You get these cracks in the side of your lips. Mm. It's a kind of what geriatric patients get when they're nutrient deficient, especially B12. I was drinking Gatorade because I had no electrolytes. I was constantly having cramps. Like, your hair falls out because it's thinning. Your nails are thinning. You can tell I was unwell. Mm. And so my friend called my parents, and they came up, and it was right before the start of my junior year. And they said, you can either get help or you're kind of on your own. Like, they really didn't give me a choice. You're going to get some help. And so instead of going inpatient, which a lot of people do, I went to intensive outpatient treatment. So what that is 6 days a week. I went for 6 hours a day to group therapy and individual therapy during the day. And then in the evening, I would go to my classes. And I would do that 5 days a week.
That's a big
day. It was a lot. It was
basically a big day.
Yeah, it was basically like all day almost going to work. And then
I was going to say, it's like working a full-time job and going to school.
Exactly. Right. And then I would go on Saturday mornings as well. And then Saturday afternoon, I'd drive from Albany down here and stay here with my, I think I rotated staying with my mom and dad. And then I would go back Sunday evening and I would start over again.
What was behind the decision to do outpatient?
So because it was intensive outpatient, I could still go to school. Because at that point, I was in my junior year.
Right.
And I didn't want to stop school. I'd always been someone who cared a lot about, you know, making sure that I finished my education and got my degree. And so I didn't want to stop. And so thankfully, right in Albany, there was this intensive outpatient. So I would eat breakfast there, I would eat lunch there, and I would be on my own for dinner. We'd do group therapy sessions, individual therapy sessions, nutrition counseling, everything under the sun for eating disorders that you could think of, you would do there.
Yeah, yes. Eating disorders are insidious because you do get that positive feedback. 100%. Especially, you know, because people think you're... first, like, few months of an eating disorder, everybody thinks you're making healthy decisions.
Right, exactly. And also, like, there's so many different...
Which is kind of a mind fuck because in a way, you kind of are.
Right.
And you can look at yourself and say, well, I'm dropping pounds I don't want to have.
Yep.
But what's the downside?
At what cost, right. And so you also can have, like, those other non-specified eating disorders. So that's, like, different characteristics. So my first, like... 2 or 3 months in treatment weren't that great because instead of, you know, my usual bulimia, I just decided to pick up some other characteristics I had learned that would be helpful for me.
That's creative. So what were those?
So instead of, you know, making myself vomit, I was eating my meals and then I would be going to the gym and running 10 miles a day, 15 miles a day, you know, and just like eating the bare minimum of what I had to eat. So at that point, I was restricting my food intake. And so that's typically, you know, at that point you're going to be called, it's anorexia.
Right.
Although to be classified as anorexia, you have to be underweight. So it's very challenging as someone who's plus size to get care for an eating disorder because sometimes they're like, well, you don't have an eating disorder because you're not underweight. But you can still have these behaviors that are killing your body.
Crazy. I never thought about that you could be, So if you're not underweight.
There are some you don't get classified as having an eating disorder. So that's why it also was challenging for people to tell.
That's so dumb.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they try and do like weight neutral care now, but like it's very challenging as a plus size person to get care for an eating disorder. So it doesn't matter.
But that's so dumb.
Yep.
Yeah. Like So I'm making myself vomit after every meal, but because I'm not
underweight. Yep.
We're just gonna let this ride.
Yeah. Yeah. So until you get to the point where like you are in a really bad position, like every time you throw up your electrolytes and your sodium get really low, and so that can make your heart stop. And so you get like chest pains. And so I'd get these chest pains and I would know like my electrolytes are low. Like you can literally, your heart can just stop because you have such low electrolytes. So you have to keep Gatorade on you. Yeah. And it's very scary. Like when you get to that bad point.
Right.
And so until you get to like that point, like sometimes it doesn't get taken seriously.
And the other problem is when you're anorexic and you're running 10 miles a day.
Right. Your bones.
Well, your bones, but it's also, I'm thinking mentally, it's also good for you.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, it kind of slows the disease down to the point where it's so noticeable that everybody's like, oh, wait, I got to throw a flag here.
Right.
Because, you know, who's going to argue with going to the gym?
Exactly.
Who's going to argue with, you know, somebody...
Yeah, eating healthy meals. That's called orthorexia, where you have an obsession with being healthy. There's lots of different names. So that one's orthorexia.
I might have that.
So that's an obsession with being healthy. That's an obsession with, like, eating clean, pure foods.
Might have that.
And exercising to the point where, like, it's all you can think about. If you don't exercise that day, it ruins your day. Like, there's nothing else you can think about.
I can take a day off.
Like, it's an obsession. It becomes to the point where it's like, that is all you think about. Yeah.
I wonder if I had... I went through a phase, like, 4 or 5 years ago where I had, like, 50 extra pounds. And I started eating clean. I still eat, like, really clean. But I was in the gym, like, 2.5-3 hours a day and only eating protein. I went pure protein for... I'll bet you 5 months.
Wow.
And then the weight came off. And then then it was hard.
Yeah, it's hard mentally to get back to like a normal place.
Yeah, which I'm still not. Like, I won't, I'll have carbs every day, but in like the weakest form, like a vegetable for a carb or like I still don't eat bread, still don't eat pasta, eat potatoes that much.
Yeah. It's all, eating disorders are all mental. I mean, it's obviously a mental illness. It's actually the mental illness with the second highest mortality rate.
Is it really?
It is. Yep. And it's just like a lot of times it doesn't get categorized as an eating disorder because it's like it shows up in so many different
forms.
What
was behind yours?
So for mine, I think it was just like I wanted to look better and I'd always been someone that was, you know, overweight. I was a chubby kid and I wasn't comfortable with my own body. And so that was like maybe I felt like my life was amazing except for the way I looked. I was smart. I was in the honors college. I had great internships. I knew what I wanted to do. But I felt like I had everything except for the way I looked. And I was like, if I can change this one thing, then my life will be perfect. But as we know, you get into that obsession. And like, it is never enough.
I was going to say, are you obsessive in other areas?
I am. I'm very type A. I'm a type A type of girl.
Okay.
So I was just like, that is the one thing. If you want to be able to control something, you can control it. And honestly, quite easy with an eating disorder. Like, you can lose weight insanely quickly.
Right.
But it just becomes to the point where, like, you can't control it then, and it's all you think about. And all you think about is food. And it's also hard to stop because you have to obviously eat 3 meals a day. So it's the one thing you can't avoid doing is, like, you have to eat to survive. So in some way, you have to figure out, how am I going to do this thing but also keep my eating disorder habits? And so, yeah. So I'd say at the start was just, like, wanting to control the way I looked better.
Yeah. And so it started at the time of the divorce?
Nope, it started, I would say, it didn't start till college.
Okay.
I would say, like, that was just, like, when I started going to therapy, like, you know, it was just, like, a bit more rocky for me toward the end of high school. But, like, mentally, I was in a fine spot. I think I was just kind of, like, a moody teenager. It really wasn't until I got to college and, you know, I was just surrounded by women who were beautiful but just didn't look as much like me. And so, you know, I was in a sorority as well. And so I just wanted to look skinnier. And that's what I wanted to control.
Because I get it, but, like, you're really pretty.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So
I actually have very good confidence for someone who had an eating disorder. I think I'm beautiful. But, like, at that time, like, you also have to...
You don't
see yourself like that. But you also, like, have to live in your own skin. You have to know how to be comfortable with yourself. And that's, like, what I had to learn over the last few years. Like, learn how to love myself and, like, be okay with where
I
am.
Very familiar topic on the show, loving yourself. What does that mean to you?
For me, that means just wherever I am, I have to meet myself at. I also think that, like, I'm the creator of my own destiny. If there's something I don't like, I need to change that. But, like, the way I look, you know what? I've done all that I can to be healthy. And at this point, I also know that, like, at my absolute skinniest, I was dying. My organs were dying. My heart could have stopped. I meet myself where I am now. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I know that I can be the best version of myself when I'm eating. And whatever that is, I'm eating. Like, I'm right. not, my hair's not falling out. My nails aren't falling out. So loving myself is just like being okay with who I am every single day and showing up for myself. What do I need to be better? Do I need sleep? Do I need food? Do I need to just like relax today? Where am I like loving myself where I'm at?
Right.
Is what it means for me.
What, other than the way you look, what don't you like about yourself?
I don't think anything else.
That's good.
Yeah. I actually, like, I'd say the most critical I am of myself is actually about my cookie decorating. Other than that, I think I'm pretty damn great. Like, I have pretty good confidence. You can ask Alex. Like, I could talk about myself all day long. I think I'm an interesting person. I think I have a lot of great qualities. And the most critical I am of myself is the way that I decorate sugar cookies.
What do you like the most about yourself?
I think my ability to create relationships with people and talk to people. And also, you know, just I could talk to a wall probably. So just the ability to just like talk to people and make them comfortable. I think that, you know, it's part of like, you know, being HR, you gotta talk to a lot of people. But I just like, I think that's like something I do really well. It's just like I can show up for others.
In HR, have we gone, like at one point we were so far to the, has that needle, wait, listen, I'm sorry, that's a visual. I was using my hands to just kind of say, like, we went to the point where if I had said hi to you, I probably would have gotten written up. Has the dial moved back at all a little bit?
I think it definitely also depends on your company as well. I think, you know, a good company knows that, like, the work doesn't get done without their people. And so in HR is, you know, we are the resources for human, being open, being friendly, and being employee-centered. If your company prioritizes that, which a good HR team does, then yes. It's certainly things different now working for the state. It's a little bit different in the way that everything's very chain of command. I work in labor relations, so it's very specific. My job is to, when you grieve something.
I'm just going
to
shove that microphone a little bit closer.
Okay. When you grieve something, like that comes directly to me. When you have, you know, a complaint against your supervisor, I investigate those. But I certainly think HR now, like they understand that we're part of the business and like your people is what makes things get done.
Right.
So I think certainly we've moved that needle to being more employee-centric.
Are you worried about the robots? Are you worried?
No.
You're not?
No. There's always a human aspect to HR. You can enter into
No, but I'm saying like with so many jobs being out, being replaced
now. I don't think so. Like there's always going to be a need for individuals to talk to someone else to explain something that they can't understand from a robot or from reading. Mm. And so there's also always going to be unions. That's my line of work. So for me, it doesn't worry me.
Man, I hope you're right. I don't know though. Like what union do you think withstands artificial intelligence?
I'm thinking those
trucker
large
union doesn't.
Our larger unions.
Teaching union, maybe.
Teaching. I think truckers, yes, actually.
Wow.
Because like, I mean,
nobody's driving in 5 years.
I think they are.
You do?
I think that, yeah, I think supply chain is still moving in 5 years.
No. I mean, there'll still be a moving supply chain, but nobody's going to be driving a truck. The truck will be driving itself.
I don't know if it'll be that complex by then. I think there's a lot of, because like, just think of all the other factors on the road. A car swerves in front of you. That's your, you know, $500,000 worth of cargo crashed.
Yeah, but the robot's a better driver than you are.
Maybe, yeah.
And it can't get tired.
That's
and
true. It can't get tired.
It can't get tired. It can't get drunk. It can see 360. You can't.
That's true.
I worry, but like, I think the truckers union's done.
Yeah,
I
there's going to be things that become obsolete for sure.
Yeah.
But I think that there'll still always need to be enough humans, and HR is going to be there to support them. Every company needs HR, whether it's in a small aspect or a large aspect.
Would you ever, if it went south, if the Bretonian future happens, and so few unions, would you, like, given your skill set, would you think about being a therapist?
I don't think I'd want to go back to school for it, because that's the only thing is, like, you'd likely have to, I'd have to get another master's, which that doesn't interest me at this point.
Right.
Maybe, though. I think that there, I have enough skills that would be transferable.
I think that's going to move, too. I bet you, by the time it's a consideration, I bet you won't have to go back to school.
Yeah. Maybe not. I might be able to use my current degree.
Well, there's so many alternative therapies now.
Licensed mental health counselor. You don't necessarily have to have a social work degree or be a PhD.
Right. So take you. No, well, nobody gets a PhD anymore.
100%.
But like, you know, a year back in school.
Yeah. Right. Honestly, I think it'd be something that I'd be good at. I don't know, because in HR, like, you absorb so much trauma from people. Like, essentially, you almost become like therapists.
That's why I thought people
sit in your office and cry. You help them through medical leave, a family member's death. You know, they can't afford to get gas to drive home. Like, all these really sad things, you absorb a lot of trauma. That's something we talk about in HR. It's like, how do you care for yourself as an HR professional and not get burnt out because you're absorbing so many people's trauma? So I think I could do therapist, because you just have to essentially, like, compartmentalize, right, which is what therapists have to do.
When you weren't liking how you looked, were there any, like, role models for how you looked that you could point to and say, well, wait a second, Oprah, she's doing all right?
Probably not like my age. I would say I was in a sophomore in college. And so at that point, like, and you know, like, Instagram was there. There wasn't as much, like, I grew up with, you know, a Facebook, but like Instagram was kind of new and it wasn't as much like in your face. Like, oh my goodness, look at all these models that are gorgeous. It was more like the women that were around me that I saw every day that I was like, I look different from them. But I wouldn't say there was any like role models so much I could point to. Pretty much like my family members had always been like, we call straight size, you know, like not like insanely tiny, just like an average looking human who's not plus size. So I really didn't feel like there was like, okay, here's this someone who I know and love who looks just like me. Mm-hmm. You know, we may have same genetics, but like, you know, my mom, my sisters, they were always straight size. And I would say those were like the primary women in my life.
Right, right. And your mom cuts hair, so that's tricky too. Because
all right, so that's my stepmom. That's Victoria. She's amazing. Yes.
Stepmom cuts hair.
Yep.
But you didn't know her until...
I didn't have her until about, like, right around the time, actually, I got... Like, right before I got sick was when I had met Vicky.
Right.
And she's amazing. I love her so much. She's really such an amazing person. Yeah. Like, there are very few people out there like her who are just so giving and care so much about others. And so, like, she is someone who's become, like, a great role model for me. But, like, even when I was just, like, just started to get sick, you know, I didn't have her too much in my life.
Right.
It was just my dad and I and our bachelor pad, we called it.
What were your friends in college? You got to this kind of, like, red alert part where your friends were, like, did you resent them?
No. At the time, yes. I would say, actually, yes. So, like... I don't even know if resent is the right word. More like hurt. But also, I was too obsessed with myself to even give a damn about anyone else. Right. I did not care what anyone else was doing. At that point, like, I was so ill that, like, when they called for help, I could have been, like, who knows? It could have been a week. I had a heart attack. I could have gone 2 more years. But, like, so the days when your electrolytes get that low and your heart could stop, like, it could have been any moment. So I look back and I... credit like my friend
saved your life,
was saving my life literally, like, because I would have gone on forever and ever and ever doing that if no one had stepped in. So like now I look back and I'm like, I'm so thankful to have a friend who cared so much about my well-being to call my parents.
So what's behind, there's a trigger though, like, mm-hmm. I get that you didn't like the way you looked, and a lot of people don't like the way they look. But they don't get eating disorders.
True.
So what's the distance between I'm going to hit the gym and eat?
I tried to lose weight, and honestly, it just wasn't working. I would, you know, and I was, you know, in a sorority, working out a lot, drinking a lot, and I just thought, what's quick I'm going to lose weight? And I was like, well, what if I just, you know, threw up a few meals or just, like, started to restrict? And then once you do it once, you're like, it's not too hard now, is it? Mm. And then it just spirals, and it so quickly gets out of control. Like, so quickly are you like...
Well, you're seeing results.
That's the thing. You continue to reassure yourself by getting results. And someone's like, my goodness, you look so great. You lost weight. Yes, I did. Thank you very much.
That's so crazy about, like... Because, like, I had depression. Well, I treat it every day. I treat it like it's chronic and, like, I have it every 100% day.
Same.
Okay. But you're not getting affirmation. Like, with depression, the idea is you just lose hope. And, 100%. But nobody's affirming your depression.
No one's like, great job getting better or great job being depressed. Yeah, versus like you're seeing physical changes in yourself, especially when that is what you wanted.
Right.
And so it's, and also in college, it's really easy to be like, oh, I have, you know, let me just skip a meal. Like, because our metabolisms are quicker, like, you just don't, you know, didn't eat as much food.
You can withstand it better.
Exactly. And so, like, it's just over time compounded and just really quickly for me.
What has changed in you to the point, or do you treat it chronic? Do you think?
I treat it
chronic. I still have an eating disorder today.
I say recovery. I always have depression, anxiety, BPD, but, like, recovery. I'm always in recovery from an eating disorder because, actually, in the car we were talking about it, like, you're always going to have a relapse. I have relapsed multiple times. I'd say it's probably been a solid 3 years since I've had a relapse where I've exhibited like an intentional behavior to restrict my food or purge food.
Right.
But like I relapsed, I don't know how many times over the last 5-6 years, you know, just because like it is chronic and every single day, like I said, you have to wake up and choose to eat 3 meals every single day.
Right.
And if you're not intentional about it, like even now today, if there's a jar of sauce or something on the counter, I turn around so I can't see the calories. Just because mentally, I don't need to know. I know that I'm getting the nutrition I need, but I don't need to know how many calories are in something. And that for me is going to be a trick I'll probably do to the end of time.
Yeah. Do you... here's what worked for me. I don't know if it works for eating disorders or not, but I was suicidal. Mm-hmm. I had a plan. I got arrested. I'm facing 350 years in jail for 52 felony counts. Wow. I'm here now. So that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. It worked out the right way, but I was facing that. And at the time I didn't know I knew I didn't do anything, but, you know, there was a process to go through, and I couldn't drag my family through that. Yep. But when you get in the system, I was seen by, like, you know, three different psychiatrists and nurse practitioners. Yep. And they're all just – their job is to write you a script. So I'm taking, like, seven prescriptions. They're all counterindicating.
Mm-hmm. One happened to me, too.
Okay, okay. Yeah. One of them is lithium. And I'm –
Yes, I took lithium.
Oh, so then you know – so I'm lithium toxic. So lithium turns to poison.
Yep.
So I'm like the pill I'm taking not to kill myself is killing me.
Killing you.
Yeah. That's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I make this decision. I'm like, all right, I'm going to take my life, but I'm not going to do it on these pills because I was pissed. I'm like, I'm gonna clean up so that, you know, when I do take my life, it's my own decision and nobody's going to say
it's because of the lithium.
Yeah. So, or all seven. So,
yeah.
I went cold turkey off of all seven at the same time. Almost killed me. I, like, literally in towels, and every half hour had to get new towels. And my daughter, seven at the time, was running between me and the dryer, like, all day long to try to get me better. So, then I make this. So, she basically walked me through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, so then so my whole world leaves me. I'm like, I'm getting off these pills, and everybody I know says, you're crazy. And I'm like, one, it's bad form to tell a crazy person they're crazy, though it's true.
So true.
But two, but I can feel my body. I know, right? So I'm like, okay. So everybody jumped ship.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody jumped ship except my 7-year-old daughter. So we hole up in this house together, and she spends the summer with me. And my plan was, I'm going to take my life at the end of the summer when she's back in school, because I won't be
100%.
There's a support network there. She's not going to find me.
Right.
I'm going to protect this as much as I can. So it's the end of the, so we had like this amazing summer where she just took care of me. Like, and she's 7 years old, and she's making sure I shower twice a week, and she's walking me outside, telling me stories because she knows that I won't interrupt the story. So she'll do like a 2-hour just walk in circles with me in the sun. It's amazing. So I managed to clean up, right? So it's 2 days before the day I'm going to do it. And I go down. We lived on a lake. So I go down to the lake, and something said to me, I don't know what it was, but something says to me, if you do this, because I'm gearing up, or the plan said, if you do this, the only thing your daughter will get from this is that anytime she tries to love, it's never going to work. And anything, you're teaching your daughter failure if you do this at the highest level of failure. So I'm like, fuck, now I got to live, right? So I'm like, okay, well, I can't do it through drugs and therapy's not working for me. So I have this like crazy routine that I do. And I get up every day at like 3 a.m. and I handwrite 3 pages. Mm-hmm. It could be your name. It doesn't have to be anything, but it has to be 3 pages handwritten. And then I meditate for 20 minutes.
I meditate too.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
Awesome. I'm coming to that.
Okay.
Then I do 2-hour workout, and then I make good decisions the rest of the day. Right. But I wake up every day saying, dude, this is a tiger. You've got it by the tail. What do you have to do today?
Yeah.
What do you have to do today to do it? And those things in the morning probably dumb. Like the 3 pages,
but they work for you.
Might be dumb, right? But they work for me.
Yeah.
Can you treat an eating disorder like that?
Yeah, you can? Do what works for you. Yep. And it's not going to be the same for every single person.
Right.
So
that's the problem with therapy.
Yeah. That's also the thing, is like you have to find a therapist that works for you. But like for an eating disorder, like some of the things that would work for me, like after, so I met Alex shortly after I went to intensive outpatient. And so I was like, I always call it rehab, but it wasn't rehab, but I call it rehab. I'm fresh out of rehab. It's pretty cool. Rehab for it. Yeah.
Why isn't it rehab?
You're right, it is. And I was in a step-down program at that time, so I didn't have to go 6 days a week. I got to go 5, and then 4, and then 3. You graduate.
Right.
And then you're still doing individual therapy, of course, and psychiatry. And we were going to psychiatry every 2 days. That often.
So you were medicated. This is where
I was medicated the whole time. Yeah, lithium I was only on for a little bit, and I was not compliant at points, but like I was always on an antidepressant and a mood stabilizer, because antidepressants made me manic. I'm on an antidepressant, a mood stabilizer, and 2 doses of Adderall.
Okay.
Yep. So, like, I still go to psychiatry every month now. Still go to therapy every 2 weeks. But you find what works for you. So
if that's working, man.
It works, yeah.
Why break it up?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, finding what works for me after I, had met Alex and we were living together. After I would eat meals, I'm always so full. And for me, being a full is like a feeling of like, I don't want to be full. I want to throw up. So every time we would have a meal, we would go out and do something. Whether we're just walking around our apartment building, we go to Target, we go to the mall.
So smart.
And go and just do something else. And it's like taking your mind off of it. And so that would work for me, but it doesn't work for everyone. Some people need to sit in their discomfort. That doesn't work for me. I need to go do something else.
Right.
And so the amount of times we just go to Target and walk around just because it's something to do, then by the time you get home half an hour later, you're digested.
What's your meditation practice?
So I do daily, probably about 15 to 20 minutes, and it's literally just to clear my mind. And mainly in the morning, occasionally at night, but at this point I can fall asleep pretty easily. I was doing it, I think it was more stressful for me when I was in a different job than the job I have now. I was working like 80 hours a week. I'm not kidding. That's insanity. I was working, it was 24/7.
That's a lot.
Where I worked. I was the boss. I had a team under me.
Especially when you're managing your head.
Yes, exactly. So it was a lot. And so I wasn't meditating as much. And everyone had always talked about meditation. I probably only started maybe 6 to 8 months ago meditating.
Mm.
And I had just gone to a conference and I was like, wow. And this is amazing. This worked really well for me. I went home and told my therapist, and she's like, see, I told you. I've been telling you for 5 years. You should meditate.
Right.
And I did. And so I just do some daily gratitude affirmations, anything in there. I really like the guided ones. I'm really not. I don't really like to do my own. So just the guided one, I use Insight Timer, and I love them. I pick something different every day.
Insight timers on my homepage.
Yeah, same. I love it.
Yeah,
we almost have a year consecutive, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, do you meditate together?
No, we listen. We use the sounds at night too.
Oh, okay.
For the white noise, but right. I do like my daily meditation.
Oh,
sometimes
Insight
it's 5 minutes.
Timer is the shit.
It's the best one,
dude.
Yes,
so
I love it.
Time and meditation. So I used to teach meditation.
Uh-huh.
I've got a funny meditation story. You ever been to the Buddhist temple?
Yes,
okay,
I have.
All right. So I take a meditation class there,
mm-hmm.
and it's 8 hours. The goal is to meditate for 8 hours.
Wow.
And
it's
which
a long
is,
time.
It's hard. Meditating for 8 hours is a physical feat. It's not a mental feat.
Physical.
To sit and not is, you know.
Yep.
By the time you're done, everything fucking hurts or is numb, right? So we get through the 8 hours, and there's a monk leading us. And we get through the 8 hours, and he had set an alarm, and the alarm's like Insight Timer. Dong. Dong. and we'd all been peeking since hour three. Everybody's peeking. Like, are you?
Yeah, what are you all doing? Yeah.
And the monk's like, nothing. And the gong, gong. And we're all like, oh, crap. And we're trying to unfold our legs. And they had said, like, you could get up and move around. But we all tried not to. So we're standing and trying to get circulation anywhere. And, like, having to go to the bathroom, but can't walk to the bathroom. And this monk is still not moving. We're like, dude, the alarm. And he's like, and he pissed me off. And I'm like, because I'm like, you're just showing off at this point. Right. And I'm like, I just meditated for 8 hours and it ends being pissed off. That's not that what's supposed to happen.
It's hard. Like, you have to train your body even 10, 15 minutes.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. So the thing with time and meditation is you can do, like I do 20 mm-hmm. minutes twice a day. You can do 20 minutes
yep.
and only be in a meditative state for two of those 20 yeah. minutes. You can do 5 minutes. And be in a meditative state for two of those 5 minutes.
Yep.
We just meditated the same thing.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, like, just jump off of the
do
time
what works
that you're doing.
For you. Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. like, sometimes, like, I'm like, okay, you know what? I only have 5 minutes, but, like, let me just quickly listen to something. And sometimes I also realize, like, it doesn't always have to be, like, that closed eyes sitting there meditation. My therapist taught me about active meditation. So if I'm at work and I can just be, like, at my desk and, like, not multitasking, but, like, still be awake and present of your surrounding.
Yeah.
She was like, you can do that if you just need to take your mind off of whatever you're doing and, like, you know, not have to, like, get up and walk around.
Well,
or
that's, yeah. That,
so
that's
that works
the,
for me, too.
That's the thing that meditation taught me, because mm-hmm. everybody thinks meditation, you sit for 20 minutes and you don't right. think. Bullshit. Yep. You think the whole time.
Yeah.
The trick is you learn to let a thought go, right?
Yep.
So then it dawns on me. So then I'm like, well, wait a second. If I have a thought and I can let it go when I'm meditating,
I can do it all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait, I work my thoughts. My thoughts don't work me.
Yep.
So if I'm having like a, wow, you're the worst podcast host on the planet thought, I can just go, oh, that's one of those.
Yep.
And just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, that's what it taught me
mm-hmm.
is just that your thoughts are just, they're just dumb things. They're,
yeah. So you just have to let them go sometimes.
Yeah.
And also humans are apt to think in distortions of any kind. So hyperbole is, I'm the worst podcast host ever. Yeah. Okay. The worst ever. That's a distortion. Okay. Maybe just the bad one. Or maybe not the worst ever. So like, they're like, I'm always doing this.
That's a pull quote for the show. John, maybe you're just a bad one.
I'm always doing this.
Right.
Well, he always says this. Always. Right. Every single time. So like, therapy has also taught me, like, you know, we hyperbolize things. We think in distortions. Like, let's think in reality. Like, okay, what is the actual situation? Has this happened twice? A few times?
Yeah.
Again, humans are just apt to always want to, like, make things worse than they are.
Well, it's hard because, like, you're...
Yeah.
So you,
it is.
Our brain was designed to protect us from saber-toothed tigers.
Yep.
Right? And when you're in a cave, you're on alert 24/7, right?
Yep.
And you're... That's what you're... The organ of the brain is designed to protect you.
Yeah.
So now you get to, like, where we are, 2025, not so many threats.
Mm-hmm.
But your brain is designed to protect you.
Right.
So then your brain starts making shit up. Because that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
Is it's designed to see a threat and figure out how to thwart it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's got other functions too, but that's the primary. Survival is the primary one.
Right.
And
when you're sick, that's all it does.
Yep.
I'm crying grocery stores. I'm walking through the grocery store with Alice. I'm hysterical crying because being in a grocery store is too overwhelming. And that's what my brain is telling me that
yeah.
day. Like, there is, like, your brain will do whatever it has to do to protect you and what they have deemed to be a threat. And so, I mean, however yeah. you're struggling with mental illness, it's all about, like, what works for you and finding how you can, like, live that sense of normalcy again.
Yeah.
And also, like, coping with it. Like, taking medication forever, okay, no problem. Well, if that's what I have to do to live a normal life or live a life that normal or joyous for me. And that looks different for everyone. Comparison right. is the devil. I don't compare yep. myself to others.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Right. And that's why I think I'm so beautiful and wonderful, because I don't compare myself to others. There's no one else like me out there.
Well, honey,
and I know that's
for
damn sure.
Even if you did compare yourself to others, you're still beautiful.
Thank you. You know, and like, I just, there's so many amazing things about me that are so different than other people that I don't have to compare myself, because there's no one else like me out there.
And that's a hard journey too, especially through like adolescence and
yeah.
teen, where the idea is not to celebrate the differences. The idea is to celebrate 100%.
You want
to
be like other people.
Right. Right. So
yeah,
that makes it super tough. You journal?
I do journal.
What's your journaling practice?
So I would say I really just like to kind of like write down like affirmations, and I keep like a physical calendar, and so I'll write my affirmations in there. And I also like to journal in terms of like, I like to remember key events. So maybe it's not like, you know, a highlight of the year, but like going out to lunch with a friend, I'm making sure I write that down because I like to look back and be like, look at all the wonderful things I did and all
yeah.
the love I have in my life and all the great things I got to do, even if it's like just a small thing to me. So that's kind of how I use my journal. It's more just like a recap of like, hey, what have I done that's like fun and exciting and
yeah.
great. We went out last night for Alex's brother's birthday and it was super fun. And we played Would You Rather, but very bizarre questions, you know, like, would you rather have
Give me one.
Would you rather have three arms or three legs?
three arms. Can you imagine the fucking guitar I could play?
I could decorate with three arms. Yeah, right? Like, exactly. Yeah. So like,
that was hard to walk with two legs. Right.
It is. So that's like, it was a great time for us. And so like, I'm putting that in my journal, that was something super exciting and fun. And I'll remember like, oh, that was a really great memory that we made. Yeah. And even though it wasn't like, okay, great, we went to a party or something. So like for me, journaling is just kind of like recapping. And also like, if I have negative thoughts, like writing them down there. But also when you put a negative thought on paper, for me, I'm like, that's actually kind of stupid. I can't believe I thought that. because it helped me like look at it and be like, wow,
It makes negative thinking dumb.
Right. You're like, I can't believe I thought that.
Right.
And you're also like, oh, I'd be embarrassed if someone else saw this.
Right.
You know? So I also like to bring my journal to therapy.
Oh. Yep. You should have brought it into here.
I know. Okay. I thought about it. But yeah.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. How long are you guys together?
We met in 2018, got married in 2022. So this year is 8 years of us meeting, 3 years being married.
3 years being married.
Yep.
So you have what you consider a chronic condition.
Yeah.
That there's a power dynamic in a marriage to
for
that.
For sure.
Do you consider, what role in that power dynamic do you think Alex has? Do you view Alex as a caregiver? Do you view him as a, what's the
good
role?
Good question. I would say probably
that's
earlier.
That's my Webby question right there. When I win the Webby, yeah. It's going to be on that one.
Earlier in our relationship, he was more of a caregiver. I was definitely more in, like, deeper in my eating disorder and like fresher in recovery. And so it took a lot of Alex learning, like, how can he help me? And also we're talking about in the car, like, Alex is very a person that like, is never about him. It was always about me and my illness. It was never like, you threw up because you don't like me, or I made this for you and you didn't like it. He was always very caring and saying like, how can I help you?
I hear that once a day in my marriage. You made this for me and I don't like it. I just stopped making it because of that.
So I've always been like a natural caregiver from the start when I was more ill. And now I would say like, I am in a really mentally wonderful spot. Physically, I feel fine. So now I would say like, not so much caregiver anymore. Now we've always been like partners.
That's a tough transition though. You weren't always equal partners.
No, we weren't.
So my wife had this like crazy head and neck cancer journey. Mm-hmm. Just insane. It got like, the Today Show wrote about it.
Wow.
I mean, she just had this insane. And for 2 years, I was like caregiver. And like in your situation, right. And then, but then when you come back, like, she got better.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God she got better. You got better. Yeah. Thank God. But
how do you shift that relationship?
Because when you're the caregiver, you're like making every decision.
Yeah.
You're always have one eye on it. You always blah, blah, blah. And now you got to give a little bit of that up.
Yeah.
And then as the person who's getting the care, you kind of feel like, okay, I'm ready. And they're like, well, my learning curve about you being ready is different than your learning curve about you being ready. And did you guys struggle with that?
I don't think so much because Alex also goes to therapy as well.
Oh, good.
He did and currently is. And so that would allow us to have these conversations with our therapists and then come back and have them together. We almost could have the conversation with our therapists individually and then come back and talk
together. That's the only way to do it. Couples therapy doesn't work.
We've never gone to couples therapy. We've always been individual therapy. Yeah. And we've never felt that we need to go to couples therapy because our therapists have taught us to have these conversations candidly.
Right. Are you a good communicator?
I think we're both great communicators, but I think we're a good communicator. I think Alex is as well. And I think therapy helps that. It helps you with those communication styles. Also, a therapist is like, okay, like you're the problem, not the other person.
Right.
So it's devil's advocate, and that's my favorite part.
I had a relationship communications expert in here. And like, I communicate for a living.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is going to be so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this exercise like for couples. And the thing is, like, you want to have a conversation with me about something. So you come to me and you say, hey, John, I want to talk to you about something. Is now a good time? Or do we need to make an appointment? I'm like, who in a relationship makes an appointment to talk about? Okay, nobody, right? But I'm like, okay, fine. No, now's a good time. So then you have 2 minutes to say, hey, I made you home from here at cookies. You better eat at least one of them. And even if you don't eat cookies, and I will, by the way. Even if you don't, because... It took a lot of work, and I was thinking about you, and it means a lot, and I want you to make sure you accept that, and I'll be hurt if you don't, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I have a minute to say back what you said to me, right?
Oh, I like.
So, yeah, it's good, except, dude, So she gave made up a scenario. I forget what she made. She gave me 2 minutes. So I said back in a minute. I missed like half of it. And I do this for a living.
Yeah.
And I still suck at it.
Yep.
Communication is
hard. For sure. And it takes work. You evolve over time. There'll be times where I'll be like, oh, I want to talk about XYZ, Alex. But I'll say it like a week in advance. I'm like, okay, Friday, let's talk about what we want to do on vacation or where we want to go on vacation. So that way we can both come to the table with stuff. Because I used to be like, oh, let's talk about vacation. And I've been thinking about it all week. I know exactly what I want to talk about.
You pregame.
And Alex is fair. Like, I don't know. Or sometimes we'll do like a weekly question or something. And so I make sure I give Alex time now so he has time to think about exactly what we're going to talk about. Or if we need to have a conversation, let's call it about finances, which we talk about every week. That's a pretty contentious topic amongst some couples. So we make sure like we talk about it every single week. We do a weekly finance meeting. But so we want to talk about.
You do a weekly finance?
You have to. Bro,
that is type. Capital A.
I know. You know, so finances were one of the reasons my parents got divorced as well. So for me, I think it's an important part to a strong marriage is strong finances together.
Yeah.
Joint finances together.
How do you guys do the money?
So all our money goes into one pool and then we split it up that way just based on rent. And we make exactly the same now. Before I was making almost double. I actually left my job. I took a 50% salary cut in March.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I was working a job that was the 80-hour-week job. I was the boss. And I was over it. So I took a little mental health leave in January of this year. I was burnt out. And I called actually my cookie traineeship because all I did was make cookies for 3 months while I was on leave.
Right.
And then I got a job with the state starting in April. And now we make very similar amount of money. We both make like $65,000. I was making $120,000 before. So took a big pay cut.
That's a lifestyle difference.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I make cookies on the side now because we can, you know, brings in some income.
My family always calls me when I'm on a show.
Of course.
Hold on 1 second. I always embarrass them like this. Hold on. I'm on a show right now, and so are you.
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
Home from here?
Can I call you back later?
Yes, bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
I love you.
It's my sister.
I love that.
Oh, but they do it all the time. They know I'm working, and they just forget.
It's a good reason to put them on the show.
I guess. I have my daughter's on the show all the time. She's 17, and she's been on the show like...
That's awesome.
4 times. Yeah, she's a great guest. But you know what's so funny?
What?
My wife is a third grade teacher.
Uh-huh.
But she's a third grade teacher, like, that she was born to do that. You put her in a classroom, and it's, I'm not bragging, it's fact. It's magic.
I'm so glad there's people like that out there.
Oh, my God. You put her in a living room. She can't talk. And I'm like, well, I don't understand. You talk all day long.
Right.
But and with teachers, too. It's not just like you can all talk. You put her in a living room, she can't talk. I put her on the show. All of a sudden, she's better at it than I am. I'm like, I don't understand. So what I'm going to do when I leave here is I'm going to take one of these mics. And we have like a bar island in our kitchen. I'm just going to stick a mic in the kitchen and just say, all right, from now on, we're having discussions.
That's right.
You talk into that. So sorry, where were we before my sister?
Finances. Yeah, so now we do finances. Everything goes into one pot and we divvy up our bills that way. But especially since taking a salary cut, like it just requires saying like, what is important to us to spend money on?
Like if you want to buy a guitar.
We talk about it. What is important that we want to buy? If something is so important.
Do you have like a dollar amount? Like, look, if it's under 25, I'm not going to talk
about it. I would say like anything probably under $25 to $50, we're probably not discussing.
Okay.
But also like we communicate in like, hey, I'm going to buy XYZ. And I'm not asking permission to go buy my Starbucks. But just if we're in a spot where it's like, all right, we need to cut our spending. I know my Starbucks is going. But
Starbucks should go anyway.
Yeah, Starbucks should go. Yeah, it says we should spend so much. We should spend money on.
Right.
But like if it's something that if Alex is like, hey, I need golf balls. He's a big golfer. He's like, hey, I need golf balls. It's better just to buy them on sale. It's going to be $200. Okay, great. We have the money for it. Go ahead and buy that. Like we talk about it and it's something that's important to him. We try and do values-based spending. So what is a value to us and what is important to us? What do we like to do? We like to go out with friends. And we like to, you know, go out to dinner with them. So instead of going out to dinner on our own once a week or getting takeout, we don't do that anymore so that we can have money to go out with friends. So like that values-based spending. I'm not going to buy a piece of clothing I'm going to wear 3 times. I'm going to save that money and put it in the value category that we have most, which is spending time with friends and family.
Right. What do you do when somebody, like golf balls, do you care about golf balls?
No, it's something that Alex needs and he's going to use. If it's something that's like really so silly, like, okay, like, let's wait. Let's look at our finance and say, like, can we
either
buy
of you play guitar?
No.
If one of you wanted to play guitar, knowing that most guitar players quit and wanted $500 to play the guitar. Would that happen?
I think I think is a challenging answer because I'm the type of person when I do something, I go all in. So I'm making a freaking band if I'm getting a guitar. Okay. I'm an all in type of gal. And I would have to give up my other hobbies, which I have many hobbies, but I would have to give up a lot of hobbies. If Alex is like, I really want to play guitar, I would be like, okay, well, how about we rent one and you get some lessons first? And then once you've shown that you really want to play guitar, then you can buy one. You really have to want it.
So the power dynamic has clearly shifted back to you. That's good.
You know, I'm just saying, yeah, no, I'm just a real type A kind of gal. But yes.
Do you, so talk to me cookies for a second.
Yeah.
That's an interesting call for somebody who's got a chronic eating disorder.
I know. I said that in the car to Alex too. How funny is that? That part of our income is literally making custom cookies. So it's just like a form of art. And so the thing is like, with like an eating disorder.
What's the business's name?
A Pink Cookie Girl.
Okay. And do we have a website?
Yeah, you can go to my Instagram or Facebook, Pink Cookie Girl.
Okay.
Yep. That's a no underscore dashes, nothing. Pink Cookie Girl.
And the idea is custom cookies.
Custom cookies. Yep. I do sugar cookies that are either have sprinkles in them, so Funfetti sugar cookies or regular.
Is that hard for you? Like if you cry in a grocery store, how is not making cookies not hard?
Not anymore. I mean, I would say.
You had to work to it?
I would say, like, even I wasn't always a baker. I would say I started baking in the last, like, 2 years. I was bringing them to work. And now I'm to the point where, like, it doesn't matter. We can keep anything in our home. People are impressed that we can keep a giant BJ-sized bag of candy in there. I don't know the last time I had a piece of candy. Because the whole point is, like, if you restrict food from yourself, you think about it all the time. You want it. I can have a piece of candy whenever I damn want because it's in the home.
Right.
Like, I don't want it because I can have it whenever I want. If you restrict yourself from food, you're going to be like, oh my goodness, I can't even have it near me because I'm going to want it and I'm going to eat it.
Right.
I can have whatever I want whenever I'm an adult. And when I'm an adult, I can buy whatever food I want.
Right.
So for me, it's not challenging. I can have a sugar. We barely eat sugar cookies anymore. And we have maybe a dozen ready at any time. 2 dozen ready. Right. So it's certainly not challenging for me because
Were there more cookies in this box before you guys got in the
car? No, there wasn't. Right, but we do eat our own cookies because they are delicious. But I would say like it's not a challenge for me because I know I can have them whenever I want.
But that's it fascinates me.
I know. It's a weird path.
No, it's not weird. Here's what I respect about it. So eating disorder is a mental health issue, right? All mental health disorders have some things in common.
Yeah.
One of them is fear. Mm-hmm. Like fear that this cannot be overcome. Fear that this is going to be forever. Fear that. And what I love about the way you're handling it, this is the biggest fuck you to an eating disorder that you can literally deliver. Biggest fuck you. It is. You know what? All right.
Yep.
You had me. You had me. But you're not going to. And I get you're in the room. Like I say that myself too. I know who you are. I know when you're talking to me. Fuck you. I'm going to go make cookies.
Exactly. Like I'm better than you. And we used to call him Ed because EG.
Okay.
And a lot of
you do the exact same thing.
A lot of people with eating disorders, you know, call them Ed.
Okay.
And so I don't even think about it anymore.
Hey, there's cookies.
Yeah. Want some cookies, Ed?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even bother me anymore.
But that's so brilliant.
Yeah.
That it is like the biggest fuck you could give an eating disorder.
And I like decorating sugar cookies. And I would say, like, I really only started doing designs in January.
Are you art? Can you draw?
No, I'm typically not artistic.
How did you do that?
Well, I learned in the last 6 months. I've watched a lot of videos. And if you go to my Instagram and Facebook, you'll see all these cookies I've done. And I'm all self-taught in the last 6 months. And I like it because, like, people like these for celebrations. I get to help celebrate baby showers, birthdays, weddings. I'm doing someone's wedding cookies that I went to college with. I'm doing baby shower cookies.
Would you do this full time?
No. Cookies are not a necessity. So people will get bored or burnt out of getting custom sugar cookies.
But there's always going to be a new customer.
The thing is, like, at some point, like, they do take a lot of time. And I'm also, my prices are much cheaper than most people.
Oh, okay.
I'm selling them for $30 a dozen versus people sell them for $60 to $90 a
Why
dozen.
Why are you selling them for $30?
Because I'm not nearly as good. But you know what? That's okay with me.
Okay.
I say if someone wanted to pay $60 a dozen, they would. And they're
well,
okay.
No, you got to ask for it.
That's true. The thing is, I'm okay at a lesser price.
When have you
price.
Ever gone to somebody who charged you $30 and said, no, let me give you $60?
I know.
Nobody does that.
No one does.
No.
But right now, I'm okay with not being as amazing because also, like, I don't want it
You're
to be
You're pretty amazing.
Time.
Those are really
thank
good.
Thank you. I try.
I'll post a couple photos of it. No, thank you.
But I don't want it to be my full time.
Is it meditative for you to do it?
Sometimes. Sometimes it's actually stressful. But I really just enjoy the joy that other people get. Like, this is a way that, like, I can give some joy to someone else and I can still make some income for us.
Right.
And I think it's just something that, like, I enjoy being able to help people celebrate life events via cookies. Who doesn't love cookies? Like, no one's ever mad about cookies. That's
right.
The thing.
Right.
No one's ever mad.
Unless you have Ed.
That's exactly. Unless you have Ed.
Beautiful. I just love that. I was thinking about that today. I'm like, man, if I had an eating disorder and I went out and just started making
cookies. Right, just making cookies. I know. It's so strange.
I bet the first time Ed saw you making cookies, he wet himself.
Probably.
He's like, shit, we lost her.
Yep. And so, like, I still bake a lot now, and I just love to bring things to work for people to try. We try to make different things all the time, but I really love making cookies. It's just something that, like, brings me joy.
It's a great gig when you retire.
100%.
Right? It's
100%.
A great gig when you...
Such a good gig when you retire.
Hold on. Please hold.
Wow, you're a popular guy today.
It's my family. They all know. You're on a show called Home From Here. How can I help you?
I just caught myself. I was like, oh, well, because you sent the picture, so I'm thinking you were done. Sorry.
No. And Lou just called like 10 minutes ago, and I put her on, too. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You okay?
Sorry. Everything's fine, yeah. Sorry.
All right. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. I'm telling you.
That's so funny.
Every show. They never remember.
Amazing.
You know I left for work this morning. They don't remember. Wait, where were we? My family keeps interrupting me. Ed and F you for cookies.
For cookies, yeah.
Oh, for when you retire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's a great gig for that.
Yeah, in 25 years or more.
Oh, you got 25 years to go?
Yeah, actually 30 years to go. I'll be 29. I'll be 30 next year. So you can retire at 55 and a half in New York State. So
right.
Got some time to go.
Yeah. My wife's got 4 or 5 years to go.
Nice.
Yeah. She's got
exciting.
5 years to go.
Yeah. So we both have a pension now, which is awesome. I work 37 and a half hours a week, which is amazing.
Yep.
And then when I get home, Alex and I both say, I call Alex Mr. Pink Cookie Girl, because while the business is called Pink Cookie Girl,
<Is it?
laughs> Alex does 50% of the work for sure.
Does it?
For sure. Alex makes all of the dough. He cuts out all of the cookies and he bakes them off because I do all the decorating.
What do you do?
I do all the decorating.
Oh, okay.
Which takes just as much time. Alex also washes all the dishes.
It should be...
Mr. and Mrs. Pink Cookie Girl.
It should be Pink Cookie Them They.
I know, right? Pink Cookie Y'all.
Yeah, Pink Cookie Y'all. There you go.
Y'all means all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I call Alex Mr. Pink Cookie Girl. He does half of the work. And I couldn't do it without him.
Do you have a prenup?
We do not have a prenup. We both didn't come in with any assets.
You got one now.
The cookies, yeah, but he helped build half of it.
So if it hit the fan, you'd be 50-50.
Yeah.
I have this theory about marriage. You would be interesting to run this by.
Yeah.
I think in 200 years,
uh-huh,
people are going to laugh at the institution of marriage.
Probably.
And here's my thinking. If you took, I tell this to my daughter all the time, which is probably bad parenting. I go, if you took every dime you had,
mm-hmm,
and had no choice but to take every dime you had and put it in a bank, and over half the time, when you went to pull your money out, you only got half back because that bank failed, that bank would be against the law.
100%.
That bank is marriage.
That's what marriage is.
Right? That bank is marriage. So I think in like 200 years, we're going to laugh at that arrangement.
Great news is we don't really have any assets. Like, we don't own a home. It's too expensive to buy. We each have our own car, and we both have our state pensions. Great. We each get our own.
Yeah, but you're going to build. You're going to have your own.
We will.
Yeah.
But we'll both contribute
together.
Yeah. Well, we contribute the same amount, given that we make the same amount. Right. Like, we both contribute the same amount to our pensions. And so at that point, like,
there are some people, like, you and I are so different. It would never dawn on me to even think about how to manage money.
Yeah. I mean, it's so important.
Money's like not even real to me.
For like a lasting relationship, like, you have to start in the beginning talking about those hard conversations. And also before marriage, like, as soon as we moved in together, we combined finances and started combining. So for us, getting married was just a piece of paper.
Right.
We were already living together for 4 years before we got married.
Right.
And so honestly, and I think it should be a requirement before marriage. Because what if they have a habit that you can't stand? That you're like, oh no, I'm going to marry this person?
I will tell you. Hold on. Oh, good. We got time. I had a lawyer on the show. Because I'm making my anti-marriage arguments. So
right,
I had a divorce lawyer on, and I'm married. And that was my wife who just called. I make this anti-marriage argument. Mm-hmm. So I got a lawyer on. And I actually got her twisted around. I'm like, a marriage license, you should be required to do a few things. Number one, you should apply for it and have to wait 6 months.
100%.
3 days? What is 3 days?
Nothing.
Everybody can keep up good sex for 3 days.
Right.
You give me 6 months, and then we'll see if yep. the windows are shaking. A. B, you should have to take a finance course together.
Excellent idea.
So that you both understand what the ramifications are for taxes, yep. what buying a house really looks like.
Yep.
Nobody understands amortization. No. It kills me. Do you know what amortization yes. is? Okay. So, like, listener, if you buy a house for – what's a house go for up by you?
$600,000.
If you buy a house for $600,000. And you complete a 30-year mortgage. You didn't spend $600,000 on that house. You spent $1.2 million on it. Yep. Now, when you sell your $600,000 house for $900,000 and you think you made $300,000, no, you didn't. You lost $300,000. And that's not even counting I have this whole – and by the way, the New York Times agrees with me. I'm almost anti-home ownership. If it was,
we're anti-home ownership.
Are you?
We're pro-renter, anti-home ownership.
Yeah. Same, because I'm like, if you and the New York Times mm-hmm. did this great article about it. Like, if you can't factor in amortization mm-hmm. and forget property taxes, because renters pay property tax.
Yep.
So it's factored into your rent. So if you amortize out mm-hmm. what somebody does carrying a mortgage, and then you add the other stuff.
Roof. Your water heater goes. Right,
exactly. All those traumatic expenses yep. that impact your cash flow that renters don't have, at the end of the day, I guarantee it makes more sense.
Yep, 100%. There's this guy on Instagram. His name is Ramit is his first name. I'll have to find him after. He is pro-renter. And honestly, that's been a conversation Alex and I have had so many times. Like, I know that...
Does that
like,
make your parents crazy?
Not really. I think like today in 2025, they're like, whatever, I can still paint my kitchen pink. And I will be. We're moving in a few weeks, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, our apartment that we love so much, the roof blew off last July.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. Really upsetting. Alex was in Idaho when it happened. And thankfully, his brother was there and got our cat. So the roof blew off.
I thought you were going to say, like, has a leak.
No, the roof blew off. So we had to move to a tiny little apartment, get a storage unit in the meantime. And now, almost a year later, we're about to move back. You know what? We're painting the kitchen pink, the living room yellow, and our bedroom green.
Beautiful.
And we still can.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Great news. And they redid the entire apartment and didn't cost us a dime.
Yeah. You got a renovation.
100%.
Right.
And we are going to get all new furniture because when we got married really quick after we got engaged.
How quick?
3 months later.
Is there a story here?
I just actually wanted to be the first out of my biological sisters to get married. And they both had their weddings already planned. And so we got engaged in September.
So you won.
Yeah, we got engaged in September 2022. We came home and I was like, wow, we should get married right away.
Your sister's like, can't believe
this. They were like, that's just so her. The thing is, I always wanted to wear a long sleeve dress, get married in December. But my sister Shannon was getting married in December 2023. So I thought I either had to wait till 2024 or got to do 2022. So we pulled it off and got married in 2022.
You planned a wedding in...
Yeah, it was just 30 people, very low-key, very us, and every single person at the wedding had to give a speech. If they read the email, they would have known. And then we put their names in a randomizer and hit the button and said, all right, Justin, who's my sister's husband, you're up first. And he was like, I didn't know I had to give a speech. I said, should have read the email. Most people paint...
How long a speech?
I don't know, 30 seconds to two minutes. Okay, right. However long they wanted, they just had to
say... Not a TED Talk.
No.
Okay.
Everyone had to say nice things about Alex and I, though. And everyone did. Every single person stood up.
What does that feel like?
It was great. I loved it. I also wanted to give a speech at our own wedding, so we did too. You know, it was great.
You know, it's so weird. Like, so when I play out, when I play guitar out at restaurants and stuff, like I, for some reason, I'm incapable of writing like a positive blurb about myself. So I go to ChatGPT uh-huh. and I like write a blurb about blah blah blah. To see somebody else write something nice or say something nice to you like that, it's really powerful.
Power of positive affirmations, like that is like...
Really powerful,
yeah,
right?
Like that was, I think used to be my love language is like, you know, affirmations, hearing positive things about myself. Now I think it's acts of service. But like I used to just like, and I still like hearing great things about us, but like it was just so fun at our wedding to have all the people we love in a room and saying beautiful things about us. It was great. Also, there was a water main break the day of our wedding, so that almost canceled it, but... My dad went and talked to the mayor. So rest assured, everything got taken care of.
Well, where'd you get married?
Albany. Okay. So we took our photos at the Capitol. They were gorgeous. You know, you can, too, take photos at the Capitol. That's your tax dollars at work.
There you go.
And then we had a little reception at a restaurant that we actually got for privately closed for no extra money because of the water main break. They just routed water to us for the duration of our event. And then they had to fix the water main break after. Yeah.
Your dad got water routed to your...
Yes.
Is your Is your family mafia?
He's a Superman.
That's an impressive display.
I know.
Man.
He's a guy who really can get things done.
I'd like to think I could get shit done for my daughter. I don't know if I could
Doug
get water. Doug
gets shit done.
He does. It's Doug.
Yeah,
Doug. Oh, okay. Now I understand.
Yep.
Okay. Say no more.
Yep. He's amazing.
Do you, are you good at affirmations with each other?
Yeah. Yep. We love to make sure that, like, you know, if I'm wearing a cute outfit and I know it looks cute, Alex is like, oh, your outfit looks great. I love, like, you look great, so cute today. Like, we're so good at making sure that, like, we continue to tell each other we love each other and, like, feel positive. And also, I'll compliment a stranger on the street. Like, when we were playing Would You Rather last night, it was one of the questions was, would you rather compliment a stranger and get $1 every time you did that? Or would you rather say something mean to a stranger and get $10 for every time you did that? I compliment random people right now for free. Imagine I can make money. I'd be a freaking millionaire.
And yet you've been in here an hour and a half and I haven't heard shit.
I know. Well, I brought you cookies.
No, that's true. All right. That's a compliment. Yeah, fair enough. No, you make a good point. That's fair. Do you, see, Trish has me screwed. She's so bad at affirmations. And which is weird because as a third grade teacher, it's affirmational.
Well, what's her love language?
Food.
Food is her love language?
Yeah.
What about like acts of service, quality time? You know, there's the five love languages.
Oh, yeah. Well, she gets me with her moral character. Mm. She is the most honest, straightforward. If you gave Trish $10 million and came back 40 years, she'd have your $10 million untouched in a bag for you. Like she's that type of person. And acts of service, like she
acts
that's
service.
that's her love language, food and nice. And yeah. But I'm verbal.
Verbal, yeah.
I'm like, I can open a fucking can myself.
Yep.
Barely, but yeah. I'm like,
it's,
so.
Yep. You know, it's hard to train your partner on like what works for you.
Yeah.
If it's not like
we got into this yesterday. So we came up yesterday. I have two friends that were playing at the Wavengers, like 150 year.
Yeah.
Thing. So we two of my dearest friends are playing there. So I'm like, let's take a ride and go listen to them. Now, I play guitar pretty much every day in my house. It's me on one end of the house, Trish on the other end of the house, and there's six rooms in between us. So she never comes in and listens, right? And it's like a bone of contention. I'm like, how come you never come in and listen?
Yep.
She goes, I can hear you. I'm like, if you think listening to music through four walls is listening to music, but whatever. Okay. So this is how bad it gets. One day, I'm playing, like I play on a stool, right?
Uh-huh.
And she's on the other end of the house, and I hear, and I'm like, oh, she's vacuuming, okay. She's not even listening through the walls, whatever. And then I hear, and I'm like, okay, she's vacuuming. And then I hear the door to where I play open up, and I hear, and I'm like,
vacuuming while you're playing.
There's no fucking way. She turns the corner, and I'm playing, and she's under my feet vacuuming while I'm playing. I'm like, God damn it. So yesterday, we go to hear these friends, right? And we've been we're out in the sun. We were there like my friends finished, and there was another band that I know, so I wanted to stay in here a couple of songs with them. But I had stuff to do, so it's like 3 o'clock. I'm like, let's go, and she goes, I want to stay, and I'm like, it's like 900 degrees, and we both agree we have stuff to do. She goes, yeah, but I love live music. I'm like, fuck you. So we're not as good at affirmations as you guys
it's
are.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when I show Alex a cookie I've done. I'm like, look how good this is. He's like, it's just as good as all your other cookies. They're all good.
And aww,
I'm like, this one's
see?
The best, Alex. This one's the best.
You don't understand. This is my
I love my cookies so much that I even make them my phone screen so that when people
nice.
Say, oh, you make cookies, I can just show them my wallpaper on my phone.
Oh, nice.
Cookies. I really like my cookies, yeah.
Have you ever made a cookie that you didn't want to eat?
Because they look so good.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. It's sad to see your artwork just leave. But people get so happy with them that I don't mind.
Right.
But I recently we just made 300 cookies for a conference.
Good for you. That's a good gig.
Yeah. So I volunteer for the Capital Region HR Association. I'm the chair of the Student Engagement Committee.
Imagine my surprise.
Yeah, I know. Shocking. I love to do things. So the board asked me to make cookies for this conference. We made 300 cookies. You don't realize how many cookies 300 cookies is until you have to make them. And it was a lot.
I can't make one.
I know. But people, then I get there and everyone's like, oh my God, these are amazing. They're so good. And it makes it all worth it, but like it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of
work.
A lot of work for
cookies.
Have you ever been in love before, Alex?
No. Not true love. Someone who loves me like every single thing, every flaw of mine. Definitely not.
Yeah.
That's a younger.
He sounds like a good dude.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about him like he's not in the room. He's really not right here. Four feet away. But
like through the good and the bad and every crazy idea, like it takes a lot of patience to have a cookie business and to decorate cookies all the time and like to also be part of it, not just like to sit on the couch and be like, hope you're having fun making money. Like Alex is actively involved in Pink Cookie Girl. That's why he's Mr. Pink Cookie Girl. But like to have a partner that accepts you through everything and
you
is
know
also
what you can never do. You can never buy him an apron that says Mr. Pink Cookie Girl
on it. Oh, I really would like
to. And take photos. You can't.
He's got his little potato apron right now.
Brother's
got
to walk on the streets. You can't. He can't.
He's got
do that
swag
to the guy.
That says Mr. Pink Cookie. Or, oh, do you? It just says Pink Cookie Girl, not Mr. Pink Cookie Girl. But
no, Pink Cookie Girl swag is fine.
No,
Mr.
Not
Pink
Mr.
Cookie, yeah.
I know.
Well, actually, that would be. You could probably pull it off.
You could, Alex. You know, it's just like to have a partner. Like we always say, the bar is too low for men. You know, there are some crappy men out there who just don't participate either in a relationship or in a marriage. And, like, we truly are an equal partnership. And, you know, like, I don't have to say, like, oh, my goodness. I can't complain about Alex. He does anything I ask and more.
Right.
And I would do the same back. And the bar is just too low for some men. Like, some women just accept a partner who is not as active in the relationship and willing to do things with them and for them. And that's certainly not my husband.
I have a controversial take on that.
What's your take?
My controversial take on that is, number one, like, I agree with you. First off, I think women are superior to men.
100%. Totally agree.
You don't have to agree that fast. Hold on. But here's the facts. You communicate on different levels simultaneously way better than us. Mm-hmm. Pound for pound, you're physically stronger than us.
True.
You're more resistant to disease than we are. You can tolerate hotter and colder temperatures than we can. And you're better problem solvers than we are. Mm. So one argument I have is if you could ever lift as much as me, it's the reason I'm here is just to lift heavy objects.
That's true.
But the way we raise men, we don't raise them to correct any of that.
No.
We don't, right?
Agreed.
They don't. So on one hand, and women, it comes more naturally, but men have to be taught. But if you don't teach them.
Right.
At what level can you blame them
for
not knowing?
That's true. How do you know?
Right. Yep. Like, I get you're a shitty communicator, but by the way, the way guys communicate is sports and fuck you when we don't mean it. And, you know, ball breaking and blah, blah, blah. It's not real communication.
But if
nobody's there to teach you the other side.
That's right.
How much of a flaw is that?
True. It's like it's your product of the environment you were raised in.
Yeah.
Like just like they were not raised, you know.
And then the other thing is like, I've met women who are just like, oh, I prefer like go out, go. I he golfs four days, get him out of the house.
Yeah.
He golfs four. And then I'm like, well, okay. So from that guy's perspective. Like, why am I working on spending time with you when you prefer I be on a golf course 4 days a week anyway so that you can watch breast-implanted housewives yell at each other for, you know.
Right.
And Andy Cohen
yep.
corral them. Like, so, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tricky. But then there's, like. But I also do say that women are just better at this.
Yeah, women are more superior.
Yeah.
That's true. It's like sometimes if you don't allow men to learn either, it's like I can't complain that you don't go to the grocery store if I don't let you go because I don't trust you. Everyone has to learn.
Right.
So it's like, you know, like if we don't allow our partners to learn and grow with us, the thing is also like as humans, I think as partners, you need to evolve together. So if you're not evolving together, like one of you is going to stay in one place and one of you will grow. It's like that's why we do like so many things together. Like we both go to therapy. We both grow together because like as we go through different phases of life, we want to be on the same page.
Right.
So I think sometimes that's why some people end up not working out because they're like, I'm in one spot and you're in another. I've grown as a person and you haven't.
But also that, yes, but that growing thing's tricky too.
True.
Because what if I, like, before Trish's head and neck cancer, we were at this place, like, we're both growing, but I'm not necessarily a fan of who you're turning into.
Yeah.
And, like, how do you, how do you mitigate that?
Yeah. How do you be honest and talk about it?
Yeah, but, like, what if you get to the point where, like, no, I honestly just don't care for that.
Yeah.
Like, I get you work out. I'm just making this up. Yep. She does it, too. But I get you work out 2 hours a day for your sanity. Mm-hmm. I'm just not that into it. And it seems to be where you live the most. And but or I get you, because I had a corporate job and I quit it to do this. And she's like, you know, I get you quit your job to go do podcasting. Yeah. But we still need you know,
yep.
we got a daughter going to college. Like, what if I'm just not that into your decisions, but yeah. my decisions are true to me?
Mm-hmm.
It, then,
yeah, you know, that's rocking a hard place.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. That growing thing is tricky. But then you see marriages where, like, they're together 50 years, but neither one of them has moved an inch.
Yeah.
And you're like, is that the best life?
Right.
Right? I don't mm-hmm. think it is necessarily. Right.
I mean, and I believe that, like, you know, like, both my parents are remarried, and they're married, both married to wonderful people. And I wholeheartedly believe that both of them are happier and in way better places in their lives than they'd ever be if they were together still.
Yeah.
They were married for 19 years before they got divorced. So it's right. not like it was a quick marriage.
Right, right.
And honestly, like, I love the way my life is now. I have amazing step-siblings. Like, that's, like, my step-sister is my sister, and, like, that's my nephew. And I'm his godmother.
Yeah.
Like, it is amazing. Even though, like, he's not my blood nephew, that's fine. We pick our family. Like, they're amazing, and I wouldn't change anything about having these additional people, so
I'm laughing because, so I'm foster kid, right? So never wow. knew a blood relative. First blood yeah. relative I ever had was my daughter. So wow. I turned 60. It's Christmas, and I turned 60, and my wife's like, "Dude, you know, your daughter deserves to know like her ethnicity and stuff, right? Because uh-huh. you're talking about you're so lucky."
Yep.
So I'm like, "Okay." So for Christmas, she gives me ancestry DNA, right?
Wow.
So I spit into the thing and send it. Comes back, and what happens is you get a code and you go on a computer. Boom. I see this lady, and she's my sister.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I have to reach out. We're like blood relatives. Like, so I reached out to her. Her name is Debbie. She couldn't be nicer. So then she's like, well, I have some news for you. And I'm like, what? And she's like, our father was so prolific making the children. There's an actual Facebook group of all of us who have found each other. There's 25 of us.
Whoa!
Yeah, who have found each other. And I'm so lucky. They're all wonderful.
That's amazing.
Oh, but that could have gone sideways.
Yeah, that could have gone.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I get what you're saying, man.
Yep.
Yeah. That could easily take a bad turn.
Easily.
Yep. What didn't I ask? Oh, do you want to call your parents while we're on? Yeah, let's give them a call.
They're in Texas right now, but let's go.
Yeah, call them and just hold the phone like right up to the mic.
Okay, you got it. I'm going to call my dad although he's less reliable to answer.
Really?
Yeah. I would say Vicky is way more reliable to answer.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I usually just FaceTime Vicky.
Hey there.
Hello. You're on Home From Here with John Burton.
Hey. Hi, John.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Fantastic. And you?
Oh, great, man. We're great.
Having a great time.
It's great to hear.
Just wanted to check in.
How's Texas?
It's great. It's great. It is great. The weather has not been great. We're watching for tornadoes and storms, but we're having a great time.
Did you see Kid Rock yet?
Say it one more time.
Did you see Kid Rock yet?
Friday night. He was great.
Nice.
He was great. So it was the rodeo Friday night along with Kid Rock.
Oh.
And his entrance was fantastic. He came in riding his Cadillac, playing cowboy.
Amazing.
And then there was the rodeo, and then he came back on and played 2 hours after the rodeo.
Love that.
And played some of his classic stuff. It was fantastic, you know.
That's awesome.
And it was a great crowd. I mean, talk about an all-American crowd down here. And they're all about, you know, America and their bull ride and the rodeo. So it was a great time.
Awesome.
That's fantastic, man. I'm giving you Aaron back in one piece, sir.
Thank you, sir. I wasn't worried about her. I was worried about you, John.
Yeah, that's the right move.
Yeah, she's a bit of her dad, that's for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of her dad.
That's for sure.
So, yeah, I hope you guys had a great show. I hope you guys enjoyed each other.
You're on it.
Yeah, you're on it.
Wow. Well,
that's right.
Hello, America. My first podcast interview.
That's there you right. go. That's right.
John, I'm going to have to start stopping downstairs and jumping on these things with you.
Yeah, please. Come on. The more the merrier, man.
That's right.
I'd love to. You know, listen to what you did with Cher and Lynn. You got to tell Aaron about that because she'll love listening to those two together.
Okay. I will tell her. Thanks, man.
Yeah. But, no, listen. I know Aaron's passionate about, you know, all that she's likes to talk about. And,
No, she's wonderful. We hit it off.
Good. That's good to know.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
I do appreciate all you guys doing this together and talking about it because it's not something we talk about often enough, for sure.
Amen.
I'll tell you, we didn't talk about it, until we knew there was a problem.
Right.
Families need to have that conversation up front instead of realizing there's a problem after the fact.
He's going to be a good guest, isn't he?
Yeah. You and Alex should come on and talk about caring for someone with, like, mental health challenges. Just, like, how do you support a loved one?
Alex and I got a lot to talk about for that.
That's right.
Can Alex actually speak? Because I can't get talk. Words out
I
of
know.
Him.
He's been silent this whole time we've been talking about him.
That's the husband you have right
That's
there.
Right.
Yeah. No. He's a good man.
Oh,
he is. Found the right one, that's for sure.
That's for sure. Around. I know.
Awesome, man. All okay. right, enjoy Texas, bro. All right.
Love you, Dad.
Thanks, guys. We're headed back to the rodeo now. See you soon.
Okay.
Have
Bye,
fun.
Guys. Love you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Such a good guy.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
man.
He's amazing.
And, like, the way he brought the studio to me was just insane.
It's such a great space. I love it.
It's fantastic. It's perfect because I have bands.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, take commercial space because you have a band during the day. Everybody around you is like, WTF. He's like, it's a warehouse and me. Have at
it. He probably loves it. He loves music.
Yeah. No, he's like, have at it. Yeah. They're both just such
Him
amazing.
Him and Vicky are, like, big dreamers.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing, like, they actually execute their
which
dreams.
Which is cool.
Which is amazing. And, like, they are just such giving people, and they've taught me so much about just, like, not even being charitable, but just, like, giving back to your community and donating things. Like, for National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, I donated $200 from cookie sales. I'm donating cookies.
That's another giant fuck you to eating disorders. I'm going to donate.
From cookie sales, right? I'm making cookies for James.
Hey, Ed, fuck you.
You know, Donna Thomas from James's Warriors.
Donna Thomas will be sitting in that chair in 3 days.
Amazing.
I'm on the board there. Amazing. I love them.
Are you going to the race track day?
I don't know because we haven't. My daughter's going to college this year or this summer. Like, she's going to be a freshman. Yeah. So we're dealing with that, and we haven't been on vacation in like 7 years
because
she got sick.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about it, but then I'm like,
well, I'm making cookies for the event to donate
wonderful.
To Donna for every attendee to get.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep. So just like, that's like.
Are you going?
We're on a family vacation that week, so I won't be going.
Okay.
But we've gone the past 2 years, and it's been amazing. And so Donna also lives in Albany. So
yeah.
I'm going to, you know, donate cookies to that. But like, they've just taught me like to be generous with like our time and our money and like to give back.
Donna Thomas is my spirit animal, man.
She's amazing.
I love that woman. We hit it off like. Instantly, because like she lost her son, and I was.
Yeah.
So we're writing a book together.
Amazing.
Yeah. We're
amazing.
Writing a book together. It's called Ideation: An Unusual Take on Suicide. And we're gonna.
That's
yeah,
amazing. My quick note on suicide ideation is: I was suicidal for a long time. I would say like my one reason I never went through is it is because I unselfishly could never bear to see my dad be sad about his daughter being dead. I thought I would rather live my life in pain than see my dad cry. And that's the only reason.
God bless, A. B, so suicide has an on-ramp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thank God. I said, no, I'm going to cry. Thank God you never got to that second part. Because the second part, you were on the first half of the on-ramp where you're like, I
can't
I'm
see someone else suffer.
Life.
Yeah.
What happens is if you keep going, thank God you got better.
Yeah.
Thank God you got better because the second half of that is you start thinking, wait, they're better off without me. And that's when you go.
Yeah.
When you make that flip. I'm so glad. I mean, obviously, but I mean, thank God you didn't. Thank God you didn't get to that.
Yeah. I was like, I would rather live suffering the rest of my days than see my dad suffer one day.
Yeah. And the statistic for I know the statistic in reverse, like parents who take their own lives, I think something like 82% of their children.
100%. It's horrible.
So
it's been a long journey with mental health, but like therapy, like I'll be in therapy forever, and also I've been my therapist 6 years now. We work for the state, the mental health coverage is crap. For New York State employees. So Alex and both pay out of pocket to see our therapist, but I love my therapist and I will never leave her now. She's amazing. And like, she has seen me through ups and downs, relapses, mania episodes, depression episodes, but like, she's amazing. And I'll go for her as long as she'll practice.
Beautiful.
She is just fabulous. And like, once you find, like, it takes a long time to find the right fit.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And like, once I found my fit, like for me, there's no going back.
You have the mania too?
Yeah. So like, I get manic episodes, but I don't anymore. It's been 3 years since I've had a manic episode. So it's just like all being under control, you know, and it's BPD too. So it's, you know, shorter episodes, but like since I've been stable on my medications and like now I like really, I also know myself and I know that like, if I get lack of sleep, that for me is going to trigger. I get like hallucinations. Like, yep. I see ninjas. It's crazy.
Nice.
Yeah, like I'll get hallucinations. I know that like I mean, that is kind the start of a
cool
for me.
Hallucination.
I know, right? So I know that like if okay, maybe I'm feeling a little too energetic. Let me take double my mood stabilizer today. Right. I have double for that reason. So like it'll always be a lifelong journey, and like also environmentally, if things change, I could become unstable for whatever reason. So it's just all about knowing yourself, but also being an honest patient, a compliant and an honest patient.
Right.
Because if you're not honest with your providers, who can you be honest with?
Right.
Like
right.
Even when I'm not taking my meds, I'll still show up to therapy and psychiatry and say, I'm here and I'm not taking my meds. How can you help me?
Right.
Like, because that's the only way you're going to get better.
You have the right approach, which is it's a chronic thing. It's every fucking day.
Yep. Every day.
Yep.
Wake up and choose to be better every single day.
Make smart decisions. Yeah. You're awesome, man. Thank you for doing this.
This was so much fun.
Oh, please, you want to come back and do another?
Yes, for sure.
Because I got to get the car back to my daughter.
Yes,
or I
for
would
sure.
Hang and do
100%.
I would hang Let's and do it again. Water. All right, and maybe we can get the
yeah, maybe we'll get Alex and Doug on.
Mr. Pink Cookie.
Mr. Pink Cookie. That's right.
Get him on, like
yeah.
But congratulations on beating
you.
The shit out of this thing, man.
Thanks, John.
Like this is like the best.
I know the best comeback.
It is. It is like the best comeback on the planet.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
No, my pleasure.
This is so fun.
And did I forget to ask anything?
Nope.
Say the website one more time.
It's Pink Cookie Girl. You can follow her on Instagram or Facebook.
Beautiful, man. And I'm going to put some pictures of these cookies because you're talented.
Thank you.
No, thank you. All right. Audience, if I forgot to ask something, then you just have to listen to part two. All right. Bye, guys.